Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're going to be taking a deep dive into something that I think is pretty fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
It's the impact of structural sexism on early childbearing. So you might
Interesting.
be thinking, wait a minute, isn't that just about like personal choices that people make?
Okay.
Well, a new study from the American Sociological Review
Okay.
is going to challenge that assumption, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really going to kind of blow your mind a little bit.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive in. So
Good.
it's called
Go ahead.
How Sexism in Institutions and Everyday Interactions Shapes Early Childbearing.
Yeah, so it really suggests that the timing of parenthood,
Right.
especially for women, can be influenced by like these larger forces of sexism that are,
Yeah.
kind
The
of
goal.
shaping their opportunities and constraints.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Structural sexism, that's a pretty intense term.
Yeah.
Can you break that down a little bit for me?
Yeah. So think of it as systematic gender inequality that's kind of woven into the very fabric of society.
Wow.
So it's not just about like individual prejudice, right? It's really about how institutions and social interactions can create disadvantages for women,
Okay.
regardless of like anyone's intentions.
Gotcha.
One thing I do want to note is that this study specifically focuses on the experiences of cisgender women,
Okay.
just given some limitations in the data and
Okay.
how gender is often conceptualized in research.
So we're kind of focusing on one piece of a much larger puzzle here,
Yeah, absolutely.
but recognizing that gender is a spectrum and there are many other experiences we need to consider as well.
For sure. And the study does acknowledge that a binary understanding of gender misses the nuances of transgender and non-binary individuals
Right. Yeah.
and how sexism impacts their lives too.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
So, how does this study
Yeah.
break down this idea of structural sexism?
So they look at it on two levels,
Okay.
institutional and interactional.
Okay, so institutional sexism, that's probably what most people kind of immediately think of,
Right.
the big picture stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, like laws, policies, economic structures.
Right.
For example, the study highlights how differences in labor force participation rates between men and women across U.S. counties can be linked to things like conservative religious and political ideologies that
Interesting.
reinforce traditional gender roles.
Yeah, it's like some places are stuck in a time warp where men are expected to be the breadwinners and women are supposed to just stay home.
Yeah. And, it makes you wonder how much does that actually affect a woman's decision on when to have children?
It's a big question.
Huge impact. Think about it. If women are consistently exposed to these messages and experiences that limit their economic prospects, it might make early childbearing seem more appealing in comparison, especially when you factor in things like, limited access to affordable childcare or paid family leave.
Huge issues
Yeah.
in the US
For sure. Yeah. So it's not just about individual choices, it's about the system making those choices feel like the only options. And we haven't even touched on reproductive health policies. The study goes into some pretty serious territory there. Things like limited abortion funding, mandatory waiting periods, parental consent laws, even the lack of abortion providers in entire counties.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's like, even if a woman wants to delay childbearing, the system is making it incredibly difficult, if not impossible, for her to do so.
Absolutely.
So that's institutional. What about this interactional sexism? I'll admit that one's a little bit less obvious to me.
Yeah, it's definitely subtler, but it's incredibly powerful.
Okay.
And this level of sexism plays out in these everyday interactions we all experience,
Okay.
especially during those formative adolescent years.
So high school becomes like a training ground for inequality in a way.
Unfortunately, sometimes, yeah.
The study specifically looked at high school life, and they found some pretty alarming examples of how interactional sexism plays out.
Okay.
For instance, there's often double standards around sex,
Oh, yeah,
right?
for sure.
Boys are praised or celebrated for their sexual experiences, while girls face shame and stigma for the same behavior.
It's so frustrating that we're still sending those mixed messages to young women
Totally.
about their sexuality.
Absolutely.
And, the study even found that it doesn't even actually decrease girls' sexual activity.
Yeah.
It just adds a layer of shame and secrecy.
Exactly. And it's crazy because, according to the study, this interactional sexism goes beyond just sex.
What else?
So, girls who witness unequal division of chores at home or who see pay discrepancies between working teens at their school, they're more likely to just view those inequalities as normal.
It's like they're being conditioned to see themselves as less deserving or less capable,
right?
Which can then play out in their own relationships.
Exactly.
In the line.
Yeah. And then there's the influence of age gaps in teen dating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which should often set a precedent for power imbalances in relationships.
It's like all these seemingly small things
right.
can add up to have this huge impact on how young people view themselves and their place in the world.
Totally.
It makes you wonder, you know, how much of that then spills over into their decisions about when to have children.
That's exactly what the study explores.
Yeah.
It looks at how these experiences during those formative years,
uh-huh.
especially when coupled with institutional sexism,
okay.
can influence a woman's likelihood of becoming a parent at a younger age.
Now, I do want to touch on something you mentioned earlier.
Okay.
The fact that the study focused on cisgender women specifically.
Right.
Does it say anything about how structural sexism might be playing out for other groups?
Yeah. You know, they do highlight the fact that the experience of sexism can be drastically different for women of color. They specifically compare non-Hispanic black and white women and found some pretty startling disparities in their exposure to both institutional and interactional sexism.
Okay, so let's start with the institutional sexism.
Sure.
What were some of the key differences they found there?
So they found that while institutional sexism was a strong predictor of early childbearing for black women,
okay,
it didn't have the same impact for white women.
That's interesting.
And, you know, this is likely due to the fact that black women face greater barriers to quality healthcare education and economic empowerment,
right,
making them more vulnerable to the constraints of structural sexism.
So in a way, the system is failing black women
yeah.
on multiple levels.
Absolutely.
Creating this kind of perfect storm of disadvantage that can push them towards early parenthood.
Right.
Even if that wasn't their original plan.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And this also ties into the weathering hypothesis.
Okay.
Which suggests that black women facing chronic stress and disadvantage might rationally choose to have children earlier, knowing that their health and opportunities might decline over time.
Right.
You know, it's not about saying they're making bad choices.
Right.
It's about recognizing that their choices are being made within a system that's stacked against them.
Yeah, it's like they're being forced to make tough decisions based on limitations, not what they truly desire.
Exactly.
And then there's the interactional side of things.
Right.
What did they find there?
Well, you know, their findings show that black adolescents experience significantly higher levels of interactional sexism in their schools.
Okay.
Compared to white adolescents.
That's incredibly concerning.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, what might be driving that disparity?
It's a complex issue, and the study doesn't offer a definitive answer.
Okay.
But it points to the complex interplay of racism and sexism that we need to unpack further.
Right. It's not just one factor.
No, it's not.
But I'm guessing this difference in exposure to sexism probably has some pretty significant downstream effects.
For sure.
Especially when it comes to early childbearing.
Absolutely. And the study really brings this point home with a thought-provoking simulation.
Oh, this is where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
What did they do?
They calculated what would happen if black teens were exposed to the same levels of interactional sexism as white teens.
Okay, so what did their model show?
It suggested that the rate of early childbearing among black women would be a whopping 17% lower.
Wow, 17%. That's huge.
It's huge.
You know, if we could even just level the playing field.
Right.
Imagine the impact that we could have on the lives of so many young black women.
Exactly. And, you know, it's important to remember, this is a what if scenario.
Right.
Not a causal claim.
For sure.
But, you know, it powerfully illustrates how unequal exposure to sexism is contributing to these racial disparities in early childbearing.
It's really eye-opening.
Oh.
But I have to ask, is there anything we can actually do
yeah.
to change these systems that feel so deeply ingrained?
That's a great question, and one that, you know, researchers are actively exploring. But before we jump into potential solutions,
mm-hmm.
I think we need to take a step back and understand how these different levels of sexism,
okay.
institutional and interactional,
yeah.
are directly influencing the choices that young people are making about parenthood.
Okay, so let's connect those dots.
Yeah.
How does all of this actually lead to early childbearing?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we've established that structural sexism is like a real thing.
Yeah.
And that it can really has an impact on the choices that young people make about when to have children.
Yeah.
But how does it actually all play out? Like, what are the mechanics of that?
Yeah. So think back to what we discussed about institutional sexism, right?
Bye.
If women are facing these limited economic prospects, and at the same time, they have limited access to healthcare and contraception.
Right.
It can make early parenthood seem like a more viable or even desirable path.
It's like their options are being narrowed.
Exactly.
Almost forcing them into a corner.
Yeah. And then you layer on top of that the impact of interactional sexism. Right. During those crucial teenage years.
Okay.
And these experiences, you know, can shape young people's expectations for relationships, their sense of self-worth.
Right.
And ultimately, their decisions about sex and contraception.
It's like all these little things, all these everyday interactions are sending these subtle messages about what's expected of them.
Right.
About what their role should be in society.
Exactly.
And those messages can be really powerful.
Totally.
Especially when they're reinforced by the institutions around them.
For sure. And the study even found that the influence of conservative religious beliefs among peers.
Oh, wow.
Even if a teen doesn't personally subscribe to those beliefs. Can have a significant impact on their views about gender roles and relationships.
So it's not even just about what you believe.
Right.
It's about the environment you're in.
Exactly.
The messages that you're constantly being exposed to, even if it's not coming directly from your family or your own religious community.
Exactly. It's like this constant background noise that's really hard to ignore.
Yeah.
Even if you're consciously trying to reject those messages.
It's almost like a form of social pressure almost.
Yeah, for sure.
Pushing young people towards these traditional gender roles and expectations.
Absolutely. And that pressure can be incredibly difficult to resist.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a teenager just trying to figure out who you are and where you belong in the world.
Right.
It can make those traditional paths, like early parenthood, seem more appealing.
Right.
Even if they weren't part of your original plan.
Okay, so we've painted a pretty bleak picture here.
Yeah.
Structural sexism is real. It's impacting the lives of young people, especially young women.
For sure.
And it's contributing to early parenthood.
Right.
But is there anything that we can do to actually change things?
Yeah.
Because it feels like we often talk about these big systemic problems.
Yeah.
But then we kind of get stuck when it comes to solutions.
It's a challenge for sure. And the study doesn't offer any, like, quick fixes or anything.
Okay.
But it does point us in some promising directions.
Okay. So what can we do? Where do we begin?
One area that really stands out is education.
Okay. Right.
Knowledge is power, as they say.
Exactly. But it's not just about teaching like the biological facts of life, right? Yeah. It's about going deeper.
Okay.
Helping young people understand the social and cultural forces that are shaping their choices and their relationships.
So like incorporating discussions of gender roles, power dynamics, healthy relationships into the curriculum.
Imagine if high school health classes went beyond just anatomy and contraception and actually tackled these complex issues.
Yeah.
Imagine if young people were taught to recognize and challenge sexism.
Wow.
Both in their personal lives and in the wider world.
That would be amazing.
Right.
But do you think that people would push back against that?
Oh, for sure.
Especially in like more conservative communities?
Sure.
Absolutely. There would definitely be pushback.
Yeah.
These are sensitive topics.
Right.
And it would require a lot of open communication and collaboration between educators and parents and community leaders.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think it's a conversation that we need to have.
Because if we can equip young people with the tools to understand and challenge these systems, it could have like a ripple effect throughout society.
I agree.
Yeah.
And, you know, this education can't just be confined to schools either.
Where else?
We need to be thinking about how to reach young people in their communities.
Okay.
Through youth programs, through mentorship opportunities, even through social media campaigns.
It's about meeting them where they are.
Exactly.
And using language that resonates.
Right. And it's about giving them a voice.
Yeah.
Creating spaces where they can share their experiences and challenge the status quo and be a part of shaping solutions.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So education is key.
Uh-huh.
What else can we do?
Well, alongside education, we also need to think about broader policy changes.
Okay, because education can only do so much if the systems themselves are still perpetuating this inequality.
Exactly. We need to be looking at policies that address the gender pay gap.
Yeah.
That provide affordable childcare and that support paid family leave.
Right. It's about
All of these can help create a more equitable playing field.
Yeah.
And make early childbearing less of an economic necessity.
It's about creating a world where women have more choices.
Yes.
More opportunities.
And let's not forget about policies that promote gender equality in education.
Right.
From early childhood through higher education.
Yeah.
We need to break down those stereotypes that steer girls away from STEM fields.
Yeah.
Or other traditionally male-dominated professions.
Because representation matters.
Totally.
If you don't see yourself reflected in those fields,
right,
it's hard to imagine yourself pursuing them.
Exactly. And then there's the even bigger challenge of tackling those cultural and societal norms that contribute to sexism.
Okay, how do we even begin to unravel those
right.
deeply ingrained beliefs and attitudes?
It's a long process, but, you know, we can start by promoting positive representations of women in the media, in leadership positions,
right,
and in all aspects of society.
It's about celebrating those female role models
totally.
Who are defying those expectations
yeah.
and paving the way for future generations.
Exactly. It's about showing young people that they can be anything they want to be, regardless of their gender.
And this also means addressing the role of religion in perpetuating sexism.
That's a tricky one.
Yeah. How do you even begin to have that conversation
yeah.
without offending people or stepping on toes or...
It's definitely a sensitive topic.
Yeah.
But it's a conversation we can't shy away from.
Right.
You know, we need to be having open and honest dialogues about how certain interpretations of religious teachings can contribute to gender inequality.
For sure.
And how we can promote more inclusive and empowering perspectives.
It's about finding that balance between respecting people's beliefs, but also challenging those harmful ideologies.
Exactly. And of course, we can't talk about solutions without addressing the issue of racism.
Right.
And how it intersects with sexism.
Yeah.
To create even greater challenges for women of color.
So how do we dismantle those systemic barriers that make it harder for Black women and other women of color
right.
to access the resources and opportunities they need?
Well, we need to be having honest conversations about race and racism.
Yeah.
Both in our personal lives and in the wider world.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be actively working to create a more just and equitable society
yeah.
where everyone has the opportunity to thrive.
Right.
Regardless of their race or gender.
It sounds like there's no one-size-fits-all solution here.
No.
It's really about taking this
yeah.
multi-pronged approach.
It is.
That tackles these issues on multiple levels.
It's about recognizing that this is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah.
And it requires the efforts of everyone.
But it's a marathon worth running.
Totally.
Because what we're talking about here is the future of our society.
Right.
The well-being of our children.
Yeah.
The very fabric of our humanity.
That's a powerful way to put it.
Yeah.
And it's a reminder that we all have a role to play in creating a more just and equitable world.
So how can our listeners take these insights from the study and apply them to their own lives?
Well, I think the first step is awareness.
Okay.
We need to start paying attention to the subtle ways that sexism manifests in our everyday lives.
So that self-reflection, that inner work
exactly.
that we all need to be doing.
We need to be asking ourselves tough questions.
Like what?
Am I perpetuating sexist attitudes or behaviors, even unintentionally?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Am I challenging sexism when I see it?
Right.
Am I supporting the women in my life, in my community, in the wider world?
It's about that constant vigilance.
It is.
That commitment to doing better.
Yeah.
Even when it's uncomfortable.
And it's about having those difficult conversations with the people in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, we need to be willing to speak up and challenge sexism even when it's easier to stay silent.
Because silence is complicity.
In many ways, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so awareness is the first step.
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
Well, once we start to see the problem, we can start to take action.
Okay.
You know, it might be something small, like speaking up when you hear a sexist joke.
Right.
Or it might be something bigger, like volunteering for an organization that's fighting for gender equality.
It's about finding your voice.
Exactly.
Using your platform and making your voice heard.
And don't underestimate the power of your vote.
Oh, right.
You know, we need to be supporting candidates who are committed to advancing gender equality.
Yes.
And holding our elected officials accountable for their actions.
So vote like your rights depend on it.
Absolutely.
Yes, they do.
They do. And beyond the political sphere, you know, we can also support organizations that are working on the ground.
Yeah.
To provide essential healthcare services, to advocate for policy changes, and to empower women and girls.
There are so many incredible groups out there.
There are.
They're doing such good work.
And they need our support.
Mm-hmm. So donate your time, donate your money, or just spread the word.
Exactly.
Because these organizations are making a real difference.
Yeah.
and the lives of so many people.
And don't forget about the power of education and open dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, we need to keep talking about these issues.
Right.
Challenging these outdated beliefs and attitudes and raising awareness about the insidious ways that structural sexism impacts our lives.
It's so important.
You know, the more we can normalize these conversations,
yeah,
the more we can chip away at the stigma and shame that often surrounds them.
It's about creating a culture where everyone feels safe.
Yes.
And empowered to speak their truth.
Exactly.
And to advocate for their rights.
And ultimately, it's about fighting for a future where every person, regardless of their gender or where they live, has the freedom and the resources to make their own choices about their bodies, their lives, and their futures.
That's a vision worth fighting for.
It absolutely is. And, you know, this deep dive has given us the knowledge and the motivation to start that fight.
I agree. It's been a really eye-opening conversation.
It has.
And I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us today.
Of course.
And helping us unpack this really complex and timely topic.
My pleasure.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
Yes.
We hope that it sparked your curiosity, ignited your passion, and given you some food for thought.
For sure.
Remember, knowledge is power.
Absolutely. And yeah, we can use that power to create a more just and equitable world for all.
So keep those minds open. Keep asking those tough questions.
Yeah.
And keep fighting for a better tomorrow.
I agree.
Until next time, keep diving deep.
It really does. Yeah. You know, because the overturning of Roe v. Wade just adds a whole new layer of complexity to this issue, doesn't it?
It does, because it's not just about abortion access anymore, right?
No, it's not. It's about, you know, this broader shift in the landscape of reproductive rights and women's autonomy. And unfortunately, the study's findings suggest that this shift could just exacerbate the very issues we've been talking about.
Yeah.
You know, economic inequality, limited healthcare access, the reinforcement of traditional gender roles.
It's almost like we're taking a giant leap backwards in terms of gender equality.
It's definitely a step in the wrong direction, that's for sure, with Roe v. Wade overturned.
Right.
You know, states now have the power to enact their own policies regarding abortion and reproductive health care.
Right.
And we're already seeing this stark divide emerge, right?
Yeah.
With some states enacting these incredibly restrictive laws,
mm-hmm,
while others are working to protect and expand access.
So it's creating this patchwork of rights across the country where a woman's access to health care and ultimately her control over her own body depends on her zip code.
Exactly. And this disparity in access and opportunity.
Wow.
It just further reinforces these systems of structural sexism that we've been talking about, right?
Mm, right. It means that women in certain states, particularly those from marginalized communities, are going to face even greater barriers to achieving economic security, accessing quality health care, and just exercising their reproductive rights.
And if you connect that back to the study's findings about the impact of structural sexism on early childbearing,
right,
it paints a pretty grim picture for the future.
It does. It suggests that we could see an increase in early parenthood, particularly among those who are already most vulnerable to these systemic inequalities.
Yeah.
It's a sobering thought.
It is. So what can we do? Where do we go from here?
Yeah.
How do we fight back against these forces?
Well, you know, awareness is always that first step, right?
Yeah.
We need to be informed about the policies that are being enacted in our own states.
Right.
And at the federal level.
Yeah.
We need to understand how those policies are impacting the lives of real people.
For sure.
And we need to be vocal about our opposition to those that restrict access to healthcare and bodily autonomy.
So get involved, get educated, and make your voice heard. Exactly. And don't underestimate the power of the ballot box.
Yes.
We need to be supporting candidates who are committed to protecting and expanding reproductive rights,
mm-hmm,
and holding our elected officials accountable for their actions.
Vote like your rights depend on it.
Absolutely.
Because they do.
They do. And, you know, beyond the political sphere,
yeah,
we can also support organizations that are working on the ground,
yeah,
to provide those essential healthcare services, to advocate for policy changes, and to empower women and girls.
Right.
You know, there are so many incredible groups out there fighting for reproductive justice and gender equality.
Yeah.
And they need our support.
So donate your time. Donate your money.
Yes.
Or spread the word.
Exactly. Because these organizations are really making a difference in the lives of countless people.
They are. And don't forget about the power of education and open dialogue.
Yes.
We need to keep having these conversations.
Yeah.
Challenge those outdated beliefs and attitudes.
Uh-huh.
And raise awareness about how structural sexism impacts our lives.
The more we can normalize these conversations, the more we can kind of chip away at the stigma and shame that often surrounds them.
It's about creating a culture where everyone feels safe and empowered to speak their truth.
Exactly.
And to advocate for their rights.
And ultimately, it's about fighting for a future where every person, regardless of their gender or where they live, has the freedom and the resources to make their own choices about their bodies, their lives, and their futures.
That's a powerful vision.
It really is. And I think, you know, this deep dive has given us the knowledge and the motivation to kind of start that fight.
I agree. It's been a really eye-opening conversation, and I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us today.
Of course.
And for helping us to unpack this really complex and timely topic.
My pleasure.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, thank you.
We hope it sparked your curiosity, ignited your passion, and given you some food for thought.
For sure.
Remember, knowledge is power.
It is.
And we can use that power to create a more just and equitable world for all.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
So keep those minds open, keep asking those tough questions, and keep fighting for a better tomorrow.
Yes, I agree.
Until next time, keep diving deep.